Rajagaon Punjabi Hari Kopi Jana Vala Bagiri Vada Dari Jam Vishnupad Paramahams Purivajata Acharya Ashtotra Satya Sri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Jai Ananta Kota Vaishnavinda Ki Jai ISKCON Founder Chai His Divine Grace Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Satchidesitam Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Hare Krishna Oh, I was going to wait Hare Krishna Thank you very much. So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 21, Explanation of the Vedic Path. Please, text 32. So we'll do the word meanings and then chant the verse. I'll do the word meanings. Raja, in the mode of passion, sattva, goodness, tama, or ignorance, nista, established raja, passion, sattva, goodness, tama, or ignorance, jusa, who manifest, upasate, they worship, Indra Mukyan, headed by Lord Indra, Deva Adin, the demigods and other deities, na, but not, yata, eva, in the proper way, mam, me. Raja sattva tamo nista.
Raja sattva tamo nista.
Raja sattva tamo jusa. Upasata indra mukyan.
Upasata indra mukyan.
Deva dinayataiva mam. Raja sattva tamo nista
Raja
sattva tamo jusa Upasata indra mukyan Deva dina yataiva mam Raja sattva tamo nista Raja sattva tamo jusa Upasata indra mukyan Deva dinayataiva mam
Yeah.
Translation and purport by disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Those established in material passion, goodness, and ignorance worship the particular demigods and other deities headed by Indra, who manifest the same modes of passion, goodness, or ignorance. They fail, however, to properly worship me. Purport. Although the demigods are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, demigod worship fosters the false idea that the demigods exist apart from the Supreme Lord. Such worship is avidipurvakam, or an improper approach to the Absolute Truth. Srila Madhvacharya quotes from the Harivamsa that among those primarily in the mode of goodness, ignorance, there are sometimes manifestations of passion and goodness. Ignorant persons possessing a tendency towards goodness may go to hell, but are also allowed a little heavenly pleasure. Thus it can be seen that a man suffering in miserable financial or political conditions sometimes enjoys the company of a beautiful wife, though his general condition is hellish. I could say something here. I don't know what having a beautiful wife has to do with not making your situation hellish. But anyway, those in the mode of ignorance mixed slightly with passion simply go to hell. And those purely in the mode of goodness glide down into the darkest region of hell. Those devoid of devotion to the Supreme Lord are in ignorance in these three categories. Sometimes persons situated in the mode of goodness accept the supremacy of the Supreme Lord, but are more attracted to the demigods, believing that through Vedic rituals they can achieve the same standard of living as the demigods. This proud tendency is certainly an obstacle in the loving service of the Supreme Lord and ultimately causes fall down. Om Agyanatimirandasya Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Is anyone here a sailor or has been in the ocean, out in the open sea where you can't see any land around? Anybody? No sailors? Yeah. Too dangerous. That's the point. Yeah. Baba Sagara, this world is compared to an ocean, of miseries, an ocean of birth and death. We hear this quite often. That's why I was asking, has anybody actually experienced what it's like to be in the ocean? There was actually some film I saw, I don't know when, years ago, I guess, it was a story about a ship that goes out in the sea. And it starts with a lot of busy in the port, things loading on the ship and adventuresome music playing in the background and people talking and people getting on and off the ship and very busy. And it contrasts that right away with the ship leaving port and going out into the sea, and then everything's quiet, all you can hear is the wind blowing. When you're out in the ocean, you're on your own. You don't have any of those ties to the land, ties to the port. You're out on your own. And material existence is very much like that. That's why it's likened to sagara, an ocean, bhava sagara. An ocean full of miseries that you face all by yourself. Now this verse today talks about three strong currents in that ocean: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And again, they're very much like three things that we find in the ocean. In the ocean, there are currents. Can anyone define an ocean current? Somebody know what an ocean current is? Agamika?
Something under the surface that can kind of drag you down,
just
swirl. No?
Well, kind of. Currents are forces that propel water both on the surface and as well as deep in the ocean in a certain direction. So currents are very strong. If you're a sailor, you want to take advantage of strong currents that helps you ply the ocean more quickly. It's also very dangerous. It's very dangerous to get caught in a current. It can take you where you don't want to go. So an ocean, it has currents. An ocean also has tides. Tides, anybody can define tides in the ocean? The cyclic rising and falling of water. Yeah, you have to be careful with the tides. None of our Guyanese devotees are here today. I don't see anybody. But you know, in Guyana, they have tides that go out like a mile or 2 miles, you know, because they're right near the equator. And it all has to do with gravitational pull of the sun and the moon and all these things. And their tides can go out, you know, like miles there. Tides are, you have to be careful in navigating tides and navigating the ocean. And finally, another strong element of an ocean are the waves. Now, waves, interestingly enough, do not transport water. Waves don't transport water. They transport energy across the surface of the water. So it's not like the water is blowing, you know, here. It's, the energy is flowing in the waves. But waves are very important if you're going to navigate the ocean as well. And so these three things, and there are other things about the ocean as well, but these three things at least can be compared to the three modes of material nature in the Bhavasagara, the ocean of material existence. What makes this material existence go? What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita makes this material world go? Everything is controlled by the three modes of material nature. So all manifestations, all pushings, all pullings, all currents, waves, tides, everything that we experience in material existence is a result of the action and interaction of the three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And these three modes are in competition with each other, Krishna explains. Sometimes the mode of goodness predominates, sometimes the mode of passion predominates, sometimes the mode of ignorance. And they mix in different ways. It's like the example given here in the purport about a man who's suffering from some financial or political condition. Now that suffering may be the result of passion or ignorance, but it's suffering nonetheless. But at the same time, there may be some enjoyment in that person's life, like it describes here, having a beautiful wife. And so it's mixed. The modes are mixed in various combinations. So, you know, we have this, I don't know, what is it, an algorithm or whatever it is. It's 3 times 3 is 9. 9 times 9 is 81. Whatever. There's that progression that comes up to 8,400,000 species of life. Yeah. So all the different species of life are the result of the combination of these modes of near material nature. And so That's Bhava Sagar. That's where we find ourselves. But this is not our home. So we are required to take a sea journey to go home, to get back home. We're right now in a distant place, far away from our original home, which is in the spiritual world at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Shyam Sundar. And we're being tossed by the waves of this Bhava Sagara. And we can end up anywhere. We can end up anywhere. Indeed, there are different descriptions of what happens, even to a religious man. King Mriga, for example, he was a very pious soul. And he did not just he was a pious person, he just sat around being pious, but he did things. He gave in charity immensely. But he made a little mistake, and he was thrown into the ocean and had to become a lizard. So anything can happen to us when we're thrown into the ocean. And we're alone. We're alone. We have to suffer. That was a question that Valmiki was asked by Narada. Asked Valmiki, would he take one? Before Valmiki became purified and a sage, he was a hunter. He was a plunderer. And he was asked by Narada Muni, is it? What, you know, do you think that your family members will take your reactions to your activities? No, they wouldn't take them. They didn't want that. And so he was alone. He realized, I alone am going to have to be thrown into this ocean of material misery, and they're not going to help me. No one's going to help me. So that's the first problem we have to face when we're trying to go home. If we're going to go home, the first thing is we have to navigate the ocean. And so we have to know these things. Just like we're going to navigate the ocean, we'd have to know about the tides, the currents, the waves. We'd have to know about those things, otherwise we wouldn't be able to navigate them. So if we're going to navigate this Bhava Sagara, then we need to know the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, the mode of goodness, how they work. How they can help give us liberation, get us back home. And so the first thing that can help us navigate this material ocean is dharma. Prescribed duties. Brahma Govinda was reading about prescribed duties, and we'll get into some of the things that in that description he read that are a result of following dharma or pitfalls in following dharma. But dharma, the purpose of dharma, prescribed duties, is to help us cross this material ocean, help us to deal with the modes of material nature. If we think about dharma, we think about Varnashram Dharma, and the four divisions that are there, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishyas, and Sudras. How do we understand those things? What is our teaching on those things? How are they broken down? They're broken down into, well, Brahman Dharma is in the mode of goodness, Kshatriya is mixed goodness and passion, like that. They're broken down. So Dharma helps deal with the Bhava Sagara, or the ocean of the three modes of material nature. But there's a problem with dharma. Dharma is very hard to understand. It's very hard to understand. And the Mahabharata, practically speaking, is a thesis on how hard it is to understand dharma. Because in dharma, well, first of all, there's different kinds of dharma. And different circumstances require the application of dharma in different ways. For instance, morality. There may be things which are right or wrong according to Dharma. Now, of course, you have the choice of doing the right or wrong thing, but in a sense, it's kind of like an easy choice. This is wrong, this is right, make your choice. But there are other circumstances when Dharma dictates more than one right thing to do in a particular situation. So it's not like you have a choice of morality where this is right and this is wrong, but you have a choice of ethically, is this right better than that right? And so how are you going to decide? Again, we see this played out in Mahabharata. We had men of great knowledge, learning, morality, ethics, bewildered by a situation that resulted in Draupadi being mistreated in the what does Prabhupada call it, the cruel assembly?
Vicious.
So there were choices that some of them had to make that were clearly wrong, right? Which is wrong, but the others were, well, both rights are there, so how do you decide? And the problem is that the laws of Dharma are very exacting. They're tied to karma, the laws of karma, and they're very exacting. If you don't get it exactly right, then you get a bad result, not the result you hoped for. So Dharma can help us cross this ocean of material existence, but it's problematic. So we may need to look for something more. So that more has to be more than just religious rituals. You might think that, okay, well, Dharma dictates all aspects of life, and so if I do my Dharma this way and that way, it's one thing. But there are other prescriptions in Dharma that are more, quote, religious. They involve performance of sacrifice, approaching different demigods for benefits in different ways. Maybe that's the way to cross the ocean. But that was also, that also has its problems. Narada Muni also approached Vyasadeva, because Vyasadeva, he saw the miseries of this material world, Bhavasagar, he could understand, and he dedicated his life to compiling the Vedas in such a way that people could be relieved from the Bhavasagara. And so he compiled the Vedas in a whole way, but he was dissatisfied. And so Narada Muni came to him, and he actually chastised him for what he had done. In the first canto, fifth chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's described that Narada's chastisement of Vyasadeva went like this. The people in general are naturally inclined to enjoy, and you have encouraged them in that way in the name of religion. This is verily condemned and is quite unreasonable. Because they are guided under your instructions, they will accept such activities in the name of religion and will hardly care for prohibitions. You see, the problem with this Bhavasagar is that there are many allurements out there. And because people are, as described in this verse, the Sanskrit is svabhava raktasya, naturally inclined. Because people are svabhava raktasya, naturally inclined, that means that They'll look for enjoyment. They'll look for the easy way out. Or they'll just be completely distracted by what appears to be enjoyment. In the purport here, it describes how it says that they falsely think that they can enjoy, they can achieve the same standard of living as the demigods. And this is described as, this proud tendency is certainly an obstacle in the loving devotional service of the Supreme Lord and ultimately causes fall down. And so because of the natural tendency to enjoy or look for enjoyment, then even in the performance of religion and religious rituals as an attempt to get out of the bhava-sagar won't be successful. And Narada Muni actually chastised his disciple Vyasadeva despite all the work he had done, because this was a mistake in playing into the weaknesses of the living entities who are svabhava raktasya, naturally inclined to try to enjoy. So that's problem number two. Does anybody have a solution to that? To that problem number two? Any idea for a solution? Come on, you're all devotees. You must know some solution. Restate the question.
What's the problem number two?
The problem number two is you're not listening. Problem number two is getting sidetracked through the use of Dharma. So what's the solution to the being sidetracked? Yes?
Return to the track.
Yes, to return to the track. Yeah, it's following the instructions of a pure devotee of the Lord who can take us back to Godhead. Not getting distracted by the flowery words of the Vedas, but staying, understanding the Vedas and their purpose. And this is what Pran Govinda Prabhu was reading before class. What the real purpose of the Vedas is. People get confused that the purpose is to cross over this bhava-sagara. That's the purpose. And for that, it requires different encouragement in different ways. But the point is, we can't get lost in those ways and not achieve the goal of getting across the ocean of material miseries. Otherwise, we become trapped. So the solution, problem number two, is to approach a bona fide spiritual master. But the problems don't end there. There's another. There's problem number three as well. Problem number three is that it appears that crossing the ocean of material miseries is a very arduous task. And we have to find someone, we have to find a captain who can navigate this ocean on this very, very difficult journey. So it's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, 11th canto, in the last chapter actually, chapter 20. The human body, which can award all benefit in life, is automatically obtained by the laws of nature, although it is a very rare achievement. This human body can be compared to a perfectly constructed boat, having the spiritual master as the captain and the instruction of the personality of Godhead as favorable winds, impelling it on its course.
Considering all these advantages, a human being who does not utilize his human life to cross the ocean of material existence must be considered the killer of his own soul. So, we have the human form of life, we have the bona fide spiritual master, we have his instructions, as well as the correct understandings of the Vedas before us. And so we have to cross the ocean in that way. Now this may seem like a problem because as we're looking at the vast ocean, we're thinking, well, maybe we don't have complete faith that if I take this arduous journey, I'll actually reach home. When you set out on a sea voyage, after a couple of miles, you get out there and you don't see any land, and maybe you start doubting, wow, are we ever going to get to the other side? Do we even know which way to go to get to the other side? It all looks the same. So it requires that we have faith. We have faith in the spiritual master. We have faith in his instructions. We have faith in the Vedic literatures. We have faith that if we restrain from the flowery words of the Vedas, the heavenly enjoyments that are offered, we have faith if we give those things up that it'll be worth it when we get to the other side. Because it's an ocean, right? And it's going to take a long journey to get across, right? That's problem number three. What's the solution to problem number three? Yes.
Well, sometimes you can shrink the ocean, the big ocean, but it can shrink.
Yes.
Find an invention.
Yes. This is the point. If you have faith, you have all these other facilities at your command, then Srimad Bhagavatam comes to rescue. And it says that, for one who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, everything becomes easier. Indeed, even crossing the great ocean of nescience, Bhavambhuti, is exactly like crossing the hoof print created by a calf, Vatsapadam. For such a devotee, there is no question of remaining in a place where every step is dangerous. So, if we have faith, if we get the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, we study the instructions of the guru and the teacher, then that great crossing that ocean is not an arduous task. Because the ocean automatically shrinks up to the size of a calf's hoof print, and one can easily cross beyond it. And so it's a matter of taking the opportunities that are given to us by chance. What do the sages say at Naimisharanya about Sutta Goswami? Anybody know? Is it Sudha Goswami? Yes.
He heard with rapt attention.
Now we think we have met your goodness by chance, by providence. So, by providence, by the mercy of the pure devotee, we get the opportunity to cross this ocean very easily, just like crossing the water in the hoof print of a calf. So the ocean of material existence, Bhavasagara, is not fearful for a devotee. So we should become devotee. Does anyone have any reflections, thoughts, questions?
Yeah. Besides the ocean currents and the tides, there's favorable breezes. Because if you're in a boat, I was thinking that when you were describing it earlier, that people got on the Titanic. And, well, of course, there was different levels. If you're on the top deck, or, you know, where the first class people were, and then there's the lower down, and the boat was the other people, but they're all in the same boat, and they all sunk. But the favorable breezes and the captain of the ship, I think actually in that word for word, it's a rudder. So you know how to steer through the different currents, and there's also charts. You know, you have the captain knows how to read the charts and apply the favorable breezes to navigate through them. So that was just some of the things I was thinking of while you were mentioning all the, we're all in the same boat, so to speak.
Yeah, we don't have to get in the boat, though. We get the mercy of the spiritual master because we can just walk over. Yes? Yeah. You didn't raise your hand?
I didn't raise my hand, but I'll say something because I was thinking something. I was thinking about something like almost 48 years ago. We had taken two journeys up on a ship for 35 days or so, going from Italy to Mumbai, and then from Mumbai to Italy, because at that time the
Suez Canal.
Suez Canal was closed, so we had to take it all around Africa. I remember days, there would be literally days where we would be in the middle of the ocean without seeing any land for a few days, and sometimes the ship would be really bad because of the currents or tide or whatever, I don't know. And I was thinking that, and sometimes those situations were very fearful, especially being just a little child, you know. But then having everybody, so many people in the ship, it made it easy to go through that journey, even when they were a very difficult time. So I was thinking that in one sense, we're alone, we have to take this journey alone, and yet having everybody on the same boat makes the journey easy. So those some thought was came to my mind as you were talking.
Yeah, that's thank you. That's particularly important in this age of Kali, where the Sankirtan movement is what we take. That's the boat we're all taking, the Sankirtan movement, and so all of us together are going back to Godhead. There was some saying going around during this Prabhupada centennial year, I think Ravinder Shroop initiated it. It was that we all go back or none of us go back. You know, that kind of unity was being expressed, the sentiment that we all work together. So together we can all go back. If individually we try to go back, none of us will go back. So association is crucial for stepping through the Bhavasagar. Thank you. Anything else? Anyone else? Yes, Sankalpa Mataji.
Maybe another obstacle when one is safe on the boat that one takes it for granted and one doesn't know that actually I'm here because I'm safe and I have to hold on and not be distracted by everybody else on the boat but and also not taking it for granted.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure I understood, but I think it's the essence was taking a devotee association for granted and not appreciating the association that we have. Krishna has given all of us to each other somehow or another. And it's an individual thing, and we should take advantage of that and not take it for granted or not unnecessarily quarrel or fight amongst ourselves, because that's self-defeating. So, yes, don't take for granted the association of Vaishnava, any Vaishnava. Yes?
That point is one of the distinctions between the third class and second class devotee, where as the material energy is less influential, a person, he loves Krishna, he makes friends with the devotee, and he preaches and he avoids the non-devotees, where the third class devotee, it's just kind of funny. A lot of the things that happened to me are kind of funny. I was writing the word neophyte, and I'm not good at spelling, so I wrote N-E-O-F-I-G-H-T, neophyte, neophyte. And then I said,
neophyte?
Well, neophyte, a neophyte. So a neophyte is someone, at every moment, it's a new opportunity to fight about something. So that's what I thought it meant until I said that. Spell check came out, you know, with all the different, they changed all the letters in there, but I kind of kept the original one because of it seemed to fit so well. It made sense. Oh, neophyte is someone who fights about it. So it's just one of those. But they changed.
You have a unique intelligence, Madame.
They changed the letters to protect the innocent.
Yes. I'm going to go.
Very nice class. I was remembering a letter that Sasurup Maharaj asked a question to Prabhupada. Am I going to meet all my god brothers, sisters in spiritual world when I arrive there? And the reply to Prabhupada, that was very interesting. I'm paraphrasing. Prabhupada says, he didn't say yes or no. He says, your second question, I guess there's another question before that, but the second question, in order to answer your second question, yes, those who are practicing, they're all flying towards spiritual sky. And then he gave an example of a birds of a feather flock together.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, we all get energy to practice more from each other. But if one, similar way, the birds are also getting their strength from each other, flying in the same speed. But if one bird's wing is damaged, can the other birds keep that bird flying?
Mm.
And I still think sometimes, like, why Prabhupada put that as like very scary. And then he says, so we have to be careful. We are having a good association in our movement. But if individually, one has to be very alert not to commit offense. Otherwise, other devotee cannot protect him.
Mm. Yeah, that is scary. I mean, there is an example that I've heard of birds. They fly in formation, and if one bird gets hurt or can't keep up or something, they sort of drop out. But a couple of others go with that bird to help them, and then when they're ready, they all three go. As I've heard that. So... probably try to look it up and see if it's accurate, but that was another example of how birds help each other even if they can't keep up with the flock. Anything else, Guru Nats?
I was also thinking you mentioned about the King Nriga. It's interesting when the professor asked Prabhupada that your followers, they don't know how to pronounce properly the mantras. Prabhupada agreed. He said, yes, I understand that. Say, but then how they'll get benefit? How they'll cross this material ocean if they cannot pronounce properly? Then Prabhupada was also chanting. Prabhupada said, but Krishna knows, he's Bhavagrahi Janardhan. He knows that what they are trying to achieve. So Krishna will forgive and take them back. I thought that was very, that's almost like a relief to me.
Yeah, that was a relief for all of us.
Like I'm not attentive to chanting. The Prabhupada's mood was so nice that Krishna knows our intention, what we want to achieve. Mm. Krishna will help us.
Yeah, Mahatma Prabhu has put out this little booklet. Some another was given out to everybody at the education conference. But it's Japa Affirmations. And it talks about different positive ways to think about our japa and things like that. And so that's kind of like a japa affirmation you're saying also, you know, that, okay, well, I'm not getting it exactly right. Krishna is in my heart. He knows. But these japa affirmations help keep Krishna in your heart by keeping your mind and heart in the right place. Interesting little book. If you get a chance to read it, it may help your japa. Okay. Yes?
Along that same line, it's such a nice thought, but the emphasis, I was thinking of emphasizing a little bit more on how keeping your intention correct, because it kind of goes to Niyamagraha, where you'll concentrate everything on getting the pronunciation correct and doing all the ritual, so to speak, activities correct, but you can get distracted by that as opposed to make sure your attention, like with this Baba Brahi, as Janardhan, that's also kind of works both ways. You know, one is that you're not pronouncing it right, but your heart's in the right place. But then what happens if you can pronounce it right, but that's your focus and not in getting your heart in the right place. So it could work both ways. Krishna knows your intention. So to me, that's also a little, I have to pay attention.
Okay.